We know where she's from.
Good evening and welcome to Star Psychics Blog Talk Radio. That's Stars with a Z because we're special. I'm Stars Cast and I will be your host for tonight, taking your calls and setting up the reading queue for the second half of our program. This evening we will have another great topic, so please relax and enjoy. After our topic discussion, we will be ready to take your one question mini reading live on the air or in the chat room. For now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. This is Natalie, also known as Stars Cast. And why is it we don't like hearing our own voice? That was not too bad, but sometimes I hear my voice. I used to hear it on this radio station, and I'm thinking, oh, God, it's so awful. But, you know, some guy said, you should do voiceovers. Oh, really? Anyways, I have a great guest from overseas. Yay! But first, I want to talk to you a little bit about mysticlivingtoday.com. Of course, it's already the 19th, so today and tomorrow I'll be sending out reminders, although I have a bunch of stuff that has just come in overnight because a lot of the authors are in other countries, and so and they know the time frame. They, oh, yeah, she's going to be sending me this note. I have a man in China that sends me his poems like a week before, so which is kind of nice. You know, but we'll be doing that, and the magazine will go up on December 1st, and the big news, of course, that we're redoing Star Psychics. The whole site's going to be revamped. We're going to have a mobile app. It's going to be looking different. It's going to be more like the universe, and, of course, the stars are in the universe, and I'm really excited about it. It's a joint effort with my webmaster and a gal over in Kenya, very, very talented. And so that'll be good. And we'll do a press release, and we'll do an email, you know, a blanketed email out, and hopefully everybody will come, even just to look at it. It's going to be great. Without further ado, I'm going to bring in my guest. He is London-born, a world traveler. You left the UK after a period of time working as an antiques dealer. Oh my gosh, right up my alley. Anyways, I want to welcome William Wildblood. How are you today, William? I should say it's tonight. Is it tonight for you?
Well, it's five in the afternoon, so it's dark here, but I call it afternoon still. Anyhow, hello. I'm very pleased to be on your show. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, listen to his voice. It's just so nice. Anyways, he's written a lot. He's done a lot. This antique thing, do you still dabble in that, William?
Not really. I did the antique dealing quite a long time ago. I was mostly a specialist in English pottery and porcelain, 18th and 19th century stuff. I really enjoyed it, but then I sort of understood that it boiled down to buying and selling, even though it was buying and selling beautiful things. So when you always have to make a profit on something, it rather takes away the joy. So I don't do that anymore. Though I had a column in a magazine for several years where I wrote about it, which was nice.
Yeah, for sure. And you just had a book come out at the end of October. Okay, so I want to go back to when you were a young man. Not that you're old, but, you know, back. How did you get started? And I like to call it an arena because sometimes it is. How did you get it started into your field in the first place? I mean, did you have aspirations when you were really young? I like to let everybody know that oftentimes authors, because there's people that are listening that are saying, well, gee, I can't do that. I mean, look, he had this and this and this. But really, everybody has the same opportunity. You just have to kind of grab it and run with it. So how did it start up for you?
Are we talking about the writing or the interest in...
Just as when you were a young man, Did you write poetry? Did you write when you were a young man? Yes, absolutely. How did William get started into even thinking about writing, antiques, you traveling, all of this? I mean, I want to know. I really
want to
know.
I'm afraid I did write poetry, yes, when I was at school. I lived near the Tate Gallery in London, which is a big art museum, and they had a lot of paintings by William Blake there. And, of course, William Blake was a great poet as well. And I used to go along to this art gallery and look at the Blake paintings, and then I followed up with reading the poetry. I got very inspired by his poetry. So that set me writing poetry of my own, which was looking back on it. As I suppose whenever you look back on your young person's poetry, it's slightly embarrassing, but it was all sort of apocalyptic and visionary of a sort. I had no idea what I was doing, but I enjoyed it, and that lasted for about 2 years, and then it stopped. But that's how I first began writing.
Okay, all right. But, so, like when you were in high school, did you have any idea what you would be doing? I mean, sometimes people know. I've talked to a lot of authors, lots of them, and I'm going to tell you something. Most of them had parents that either had PhDs, taught in school, higher educated parents. Now, what about your parents? Did you follow anything that they did, or you ventured off on your own?
It's quite interesting what you say, because my parents had no interest in writing or literature at all. But on my mother's side, she had two, I loved them, but they were crazy. She had two crazy aunts. And
I love it.
These were my great aunts, and their father had been the editor of a big national newspaper in this country. It's called The Observer. And they were published poets, and they one of them sold all the family portraits for whiskey, so they were slightly crazy. And they used to give me books for my birthday. When I was a small boy, they would send me books like, you know, the C.S. Lewis Narnia stories, ones like that. And they introduced me to a whole range of books and encouraged me in the world of the imagination, really. And my father was... He was a chartered accountant, you know. Do you have that in America? I'm sure, obviously, you do, but he was a businessman type. So he had no interest in that. I don't think he ever read anything except the daily newspaper. But
yeah,
these two crazy aunts.
To. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The two aunts, they
your crazy
the
aunts.
Flames.
Oh, no, this was your mother's aunts or your aunts?
They were my mother's aunts, so they were like great aunts.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So they were my grandmother's sisters, and they encouraged me in this. So
you're lucky you had that, you know, because oftentimes, I mean, now it's probably more common, but I don't know. I wasn't encouraged to do anything when I was young, really young. I mean, you know, like high schoolish and that. But I think, you know, in other countries. It wasn't the same as it was like for me, because it sounds like yours was different. You were inspired with your relatives, but you had an idea. You knew. I mean, I guess I had some ideas. I wanted to go into medicine. I wanted to either be a vet because I thought I'd be really good at it, but that didn't pan out. And women then didn't go to college. It was rare. I mean, you just didn't. You didn't get a higher education. My one girlfriend went to a college, but it was a junior college, and she never finished anything after that. She never went beyond. So, you know, all people that are within my age group probably think, you know, did we really miss out? But I want to intervene and tell them you did not. I didn't really miss out because look what I'm doing now. I didn't have any training. Not one. Not one training. I mean, but so for you, you were meant to do higher things, more things, be well known around the world. See, well, I guess maybe I'm known around the world. I don't know. But you know what I'm saying, William? Things panned out great for you. And these two crazy aunts, I'll call them crazy aunts, really, because they were both poets, they saw something in you to push you forth. We gotta do this. I don't know if they talk to each other, and that's why they encourage you so much. But that's wonderful. I think that's wonderful because look what you've done. My goodness. Now you wrote this book, but you've written a lot. You have written a lot of things here. This is not your first. My goodness, you all wrote "Meeting the Masters: The Spiritual Apprenticeship" back in 2012. Remember the Creator, the Reality of God. I love that. That was in 2019. And you wrote Albion Awakening. Now, who is Albion or Albion? Who is that? Is that a particular...
I wrote half of that. I wrote that in conjunction with a colleague because there were three of us who had a blog at one time, which was about Albion, which is Albion is the spiritual counterpart to Great Britain. It's a kind of higher self of Great Britain or England, Scotland, Ireland, Wales, all those three countries. So it's the mythical, mystical aspect of those islands. And we wrote this blog to bring out the spiritual side of the country, which we all thought and still do think was being sadly neglected. And so it explored different people. It explored some of the tales and myths and history of the British Isles. And it explored where we might go from here. And that book was a result of the blog. The blog finished eventually, I think about 2 years ago. And the book just came out of that.
And then you wrote this last one, Earth is a School. Just that title alone tells you that you can learn from everything around you and everyone around you. I mean, it's true. It's true.
Well, I think that that is what we come to this world to do, is to learn, to become more spiritually aware. And there are all sorts of opportunities and tests and challenges that we face in this world, which we couldn't really face anywhere, because the nature of this world, it's set up in such a clever way that it does do that. It brings tests, it brings challenges. And so we come here to grow, really. I always equate it to this world being like the ground, and we're seeds planted in the ground. And we have to grow up through the darkness. Sometimes it's dark around us, isn't it? Towards the light, the sunlight.
Right.
And that's what this world is all about.
You know, and that's a great name for a book, because, like, everybody can relate to it. If you look back from when you were a young child, wherever you went, wherever your parents took you, or if they did or they didn't matter. You learned from your surroundings. You learned how to be, grow into a great adult. Some people don't. I know that.
Yeah.
But you know, and that's unfortunate that what surrounds you oftentimes is what you turn out to be. And I can relate to this a lot. This is very important. It really, really is. I think there's a real big lesson in that book. I think there's just a lot to learn. Well, a lot to learn. Earth is a school. Okay, so what made you write about this particular subject? I mean, but you've done a few different things. Remember the Creator, but you're very spiritual. And you know, I've had so many spiritual people like yourself from all over the world the last maybe 3 months, almost every week, if not twice a week. And there's something going on. People need to hear this. They need to hear from people like you, and you're in another country. And I want to thank you for calling in too, because you had to pay for Skype. Anyways, it's a lot to be learned if people would just listen to those that I have on, like yourself, because you can tell us so many things. And like you said, over where you are, spirituality or the metaphysical, if you want to call it that, is not that important. Why do you think?
I think we're living through, really, because a lot of people are very dissatisfied with conventional religion. It's as though we've gone past that in a way. I don't think we have gone past it, but it seems as though we've gone past it, because there are so many other things from the world of science and from the arts and philosophy and so on, which seem to poke holes in that. And therefore we think, well, that's just something that people believed in the past, but it's not good enough for us now. But the trouble is, we have nothing to replace it, because we don't really see beyond this world and the limitations of our five senses. But I think one of the most important things to learn nowadays is that this world is the outermost part of a much greater reality. And it's our job and our destiny and our joy to reach out beyond the limitations of this world, to expand our minds and our hearts, because it's all one process, really, into this greater beyond. And that's how we grow. And, you know, if life isn't about growing, it then becomes a certain kind of death, doesn't it? And perhaps that's what's happening in the world today, is that we're dying in a way, because we're not growing. We're concerned with material things. They don't really bring any happiness in the long run, do they? That's, everybody knows that.
I know. It's
sad, but within that sadness, there is an opportunity, I think, because the very sadness might make us just break out. We might think, okay, you know, we've got to go further. This is just not working anymore. So we have to explore new avenues. We have to open our minds to what might be beyond. We've lived in a certain way for maybe 200 years, I suppose, since the 18th century enlightenment, it's called. So we've lived this world. We've exhausted the materialistic experience. It was very exciting for a while.
Well,
sorry,
you know, too, it's people like yourself that brings all this information out, and there's lots of you. I'm telling you, there are lots of us. I do it on the radio. I do it in the magazine. So that's my contribution. I don't know if I can do anything else. Yeah, I have a little book in my head, but it's a fairy tale. It's for younger people to get them to believe in things they cannot see. So in a way, you know, that's spiritual growth. You know, I have a granddaughter that's just like I am. And I'm very lucky. But I didn't really push her to that. She would just come and she knew what I did. And she, you know, she would come and tell me these little things, and she wouldn't want anybody to hear it. And I said, well, why not? And she says, well, because they'll think there's something wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with you. You know, but you know, people sometimes have closed minds, and it's like they're in a closet and they close the door and they don't want to come out and reach out for people like us, you know, and they're all over the world. And it's a wonderful thing, but I'm telling you, William, something great is coming. It's just there's just too many thinking about your soul and what happens after you die. I mean, these books, there's just so many books coming out. It's wonderful. It's just wonderful, I think. And you're a part of that, you know. You are a part of it. Go ahead.
You mentioned fairy tales just then, and I think that's – you should write your fairy tale, because one of the great things about fairy tales is that they – because they're fantasy in a way, they get past – they get past the rational, critical mind, and they get straight to the imagination. And then they do their work in the imagination. And then they grow within the imagination. And so all the normal critical faculties will say, hey, that's ridiculous. You don't get people flying through the air. They're bypassed.
This is about a couple. This is about two people and her abilities and how she believes. And, of course, it's me. And, I have had this in my head for so long, and everybody encourages me. And, my goodness, I've got Gavin over there at Hunt Publishing. I mean, I've got all these avenues, you know. And sometimes it's kind of nice to read about something that you don't really have to think when you read. I mean, it's not too heavy. You know, and my granddaughter's doing the illustrations for it. She just got accepted to a school called SCAD. It's Savannah College of Art and Design. It's in Savannah, and it's not that far. And I didn't encourage her. I didn't push her. I mean, she's very talented because that's a specialty school. They do films and art, they're artists and all kinds of stuff there. I mean, they're going to start having big movie companies come in. So the door is opening for her, and I told her, I said, if you have a chance, because you don't really know what you want to do, expand your horizon. Do it. And she's getting scholarships, and I'm just so pleased. And this is going to help what she's doing. And, yeah, the story is really beautiful. It really is. I just have to find the right words and sit down and at my keyboard here and open up Microsoft Word and type away. That's what I have to do. And I'm makes me happy that you're encouraging me to do it.
I think you definitely should, because one of the things that inspired me when I was younger, it was fairy stories. There was, I mentioned the C.S. Lewis Narnia stories. Do you know them? But there's also Lord of the Rings,
yes,
a famous book by Tolkien, which is a fairy story, really. But that's inspired many, many people to see that there's a truth in these things which goes beyond the everyday mundane truth,
mm-hmm,
that there's a higher form of truth which is represented almost symbolically. And therefore, they do inspire us on a level which we don't normally encounter. And I think a lot of fairy stories do have a truth in them which may not be literally true, but has a deeper reality to them. But I should tell you that the book, my recent book, Earth is a School, was written, it was really inspired by certain experiences I had when I was younger, spiritual experiences. And the title, in fact, came, well, that didn't come to me. It was something that was told me by teachers that I had many years ago. These teachers were spiritual beings who spoke to me through a medium.
Oh, okay. You piqued my ears. I'm listening. Spiritual beings. I love it. Right up my alley. What were they like? I mean, did you see them or did you hear them or were they in your head or what?
No, I heard them. I didn't see them, but I heard them, and it was them because there were several. This was when I was in my early 20s and I'd first become interested in the spiritual path. And I was living with a friend who had been, well, he'd become a friend. I'd met him and we began talking and we found we had mutual interests in metaphysical things, spiritual things, mystical things. And we ended up living together. And it was through him I became an antiques dealer, actually, because he was an antiques dealer as well. But anyhow, we used to meditate together every evening.
Mm-hmm.
And one evening while we were meditating together, he went into a deep, deep trance. And he sat up very straight, like one of those Egyptian statues with a very straight back, his hands on his lap. And then a voice spoke through him.
Mm-hmm.
And this voice wasn't his.
Right.
It was very, very loving and profound. And it said that I would call him he, because it was a male voice, although it wasn't this friend of mine, who I'll call Michael, just for ease, because that was his name as well. It wasn't Michael's voice at all. It was a totally different voice, different kind of accent. And he said he was pleased that we had made the decision to live together, because this was something they had desired so that we could both grow in spiritual understanding. And he would come, they would come, because there were several of them, many nights over the next several years and speak to me and just basically give me a spiritual education, telling me the reason that I'd come to Earth, the lessons that I was supposed to learn, and just general guidance on the spiritual path. And one of the things that they said was, Earth is a school, and that people come here to learn spiritual lessons before returning to the higher worlds. End of their task. So that's an idea that I have developed in this book, trying to explain what the school is for, and the whole process of being born, living here, learning here, and then leaving this mortal plane to go back to the spiritual worlds, which are our true home. That's the idea. That's our true home.
That's true. I mean, we're working toward, you know, yeah. I've said this before, is it's like having a tablet, and you've got a line going down the center, pluses and minuses, and I always say you better have a lot of pluses by the time you pass and you go, because you're working your way to a better place where you're going. I had a man on the other day, and he said to me, you know, Natalie, because I told him some things that I've done, and he says, you're already there. He said, because I've, from when I was a little girl all the way to now, and he said, why, I want to ask you, he said, why do you do all these things for all these people, and I feed deer, and they're in my backyard, and I have a whole bunch, and I just get so much delight in it, and I worry about them. Tell me, I don't even know why, because of course I'll survive. He said, you see, all of those little things that you've done are being kept track. There's somebody is tracking them, and they know you don't have to worry. I said, well, I don't worry. I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing as long as I can, because I love doing it, you know. Now, in your book, do you have any lessons in there? Because it is Earth is a school. I mean, do you point out some things so that everybody knows about the ending of it, like you need to do certain things, you need to absorb certain things while you're here? Tell me a little bit, tell me more about the book. I mean, I don't have it yet, so I don't know. I mean, I have a little synopsis of it here.
The ending is up to us, really. That's the point of school. The school has tests, doesn't it? And it's up to you to do your work and pass these tests. So the ending is in our own hands. And I think that the main function of the school at the moment is to make us open our mind to what is beyond this world. Now, if we're just satisfied with this world as it is, if we take this world as a place which exists for its own sake and for our life in it, just to be fulfilled in this world, then we're not learning the lesson of this world. Because the lesson of this world is to go beyond it. While still valuing it, it's important for itself, but it's not. Its greater function is to point beyond itself to the higher world. And so I would call this world a creation. And a creation means there is a creator. And so if we start looking at this world as a creation, then we need to look beyond the creation towards the creator. And it's rather similar to what Jesus said, that the first commandment is to love God.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second commandment is to love your neighbor, because that takes care of the vertical axis, which is human heart up to God, and then the horizontal axis, which is the human heart to other human beings. So both these dimensions of life are things that we should be learning. It's very simple in many respects. That's the funny thing. There are many bit different nuances and grades and so on, but the basic lesson is very simple. It's summed up in those two commandments, love God and love your neighbor. And, of course, it says love your neighbor as yourself, which is a clever way of putting it, because you don't always love yourself, do you? if you're...
No. And so I think it's because we don't know what that means. I love what I do, but sometimes I don't really say, I grew up different, but a lot of people really have difficulty. They pick at themselves like, you know, I'm this, I'm that. You know, I see a lot of that, like with young girls. They don't think they're pretty, for example. Well, everybody is beautiful. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Again, you're not the beholder. You're not supposed to be complimenting yourself like that. Just do the best you can with what you have. And it's what's inside to me. That's so important to me. If you're pretty or handsome and you don't have it inside, you don't have nothing as far as I'm concerned. And I'll know right away. I will know right away what you're about. But what I don't understand is now, everybody seems to be like floundering and helter skelter. I don't even like to use that term, but you know what I'm saying? Going this way, that way, wanting to do this. They don't even know what they're doing.
Well, I think some of that, and I think this feeds into what you were saying about young girls not thinking they're pretty enough,
yeah,
is because there are so many technologies surrounding us on all sides. So these young girls only start thinking they're not pretty because they're comparing themselves with impossible ideals that they see in the media, you know, sort of airbrushed beauties that are just not even real. So they're saying, you know, I could never match up to that fantastically beautiful person. But it's a cliche, but the real beauty is in someone's heart. And if someone has a good heart, that will come out through her eyes. And even if she's not absolutely stunning,
eyes are the windows of the soul.
Exactly, yes. Whereas you see some of these beautiful people, so-called beautiful people, but they've got dead eyes. And their form might be beautiful, but if you were with them for any period of time, you would get
sick of it.
Probably
wouldn't like them, right?
Because they'd be too. It's a curse in a way to be beautiful because you become self-absorbed. You become narcissistic. It's rather like, again, difficult for the rich people to get to heaven. You know, like a camel going to the eye of a needle, as it says in the Bible. Beauty is a kind of richness as well. And if you're very beautiful, you're slightly cursed because you become too concerned with that. And then, of course, inevitably,
you're consumed with it too. It's consumed, don't you think, William? They get consumed with it. And I look at some of these people that are kind of famous. I mean, I don't look at them as famous, but, you know, you look at them and I'll think to myself, just give yourself about 30 years. If you're still here, you're not going to look like that. You know, everybody ages. You can't stop it. It's what you do with it. And they're going to have a difficult time. And, I mean, I know these two young girls that are, one's in junior high, one's in high school. It's a friend's daughters. And they're both on the heavy side, William. Now, I don't talk to them about it, of course, but their eyes just light up. I look at them and I say to myself, oh my gosh, how pretty they are. I don't look at how overweight they are, but there's just something, they've got something. You know what I'm saying? And I'm so pleased when I'm around them. But I think the younger one doesn't think she's pretty enough because she doesn't make friends easily. So I talked with her a little bit. I don't like to talk too much because sometimes I'll talk too much. But it's things like that. They don't realize. And you know what, William? She loves books. She loves to read. Yes, she just went into ninth grade. And she brought all her books when I was at her house one day, all of her books out. I'm thinking, look at these books she's reading. Oh, my goodness, I can't believe it. I said, you know, I get a lot of books. She said, you do? And I said, well, almost every author, the publicist, will send me a book. I mean, or several, or, you know, I mean, I've got bookshelves. She said, really? I said, yes, I'd like you to come over one day. And you can look at some of them and you can take them home and read them because there's a lot of good things here. I said, you know, a lot of them are about how to make you a better person and belief in things. And she says, like your fairy tale. I said, yeah, like my fairy tale. I said, she said, I can't wait to read that. Can you imagine? I'm going to tell you something here that, and it's only because you inspired me a little bit to write it. My granddaughter took part of it when she was in the ninth grade, and we had written a bunch of it, and she helped me, you know. I mean, I wanted it at her level so she could understand it. She took it in and read it. She gave it to her English teacher, and her English teacher said, I want you to read it. She stood up, and she read it, and she said, Graham, they clapped. They just loved it. They were smiling. And, you know, that should have told me something right there, that, you know, and it'll teach them to use their imagination. And that's another thing about what we can learn on Earth, that Earth is a school. If you can imagine it, doesn't mean that you can't do it, right?
No, exactly, yes, that's quite true, yeah. I think the imagination is very
important.
It's
incredible.
It's what got me started on this spiritual path, really, because the imagination takes you beyond the everyday, beyond this world, and beyond the, maybe the limitations of your possibly quite boring life, and you can you can go anywhere with it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think it's important to realize that the imagination is true in a way. It doesn't mean to say that everything you imagine is true, but what is true is the creative fire that the imagination has.
Right. It's true. I mean, you know, if you have, if you can have imagination, then you can be creative because it will feed that. You probably find it true. I know I do. I have somebody that inspires me almost every day because she just thinks that I can do anything, not only my granddaughter and other people, but she does. She says, oh, you can do that. Well, how do you know I can do that? She said, because you can't. She said, you don't give yourself credit. Well, what I've done, what I've, you know, the magazine alone, the starting of it was not, that's, I've been doing that, William, since 1999. I mean, and it evolved. You know, I had to go after authors like yourself and say, can you send me an article to put in this? You know, help! Now I don't have to do that anymore. I have a great, they're not fans, but I have like Gavin is one. You know, I mean, he sends me, I'll say, okay, send me what you got. He'll send me five things for the magazine. And then, Who do you want to talk to? Tell me. I'll get him. Anybody you want, I'll get him. And when you get, see, he's my encouragement. You know, he inspires me too. And who inspires you?
Who inspires me? Well,
was it your friend that's a trans medium, or you still hear them? Do you still get that?
I don't know because. Funny enough, he died in the year you started your magazine, 1999. And no, that was 22 years ago. He was 79. It was a good. He'd had a good life, so he had moved on to the next world. That was a good thing. But the masters, as I called them, as they called themselves, who spoke to me through him, they said they would also speak to me through what they called impression. Now, impression is a kind of spiritual inspiration whereby they communicate with you on a higher level, which you don't hear. You don't have words coming in your head like telepathy or something like that. But ideas come to your head, which is then your responsibility to put into words. It's a kind of nonverbal communication. And they said they would continue to communicate with me in that way. Now, that depends on me being able to receive it properly and no
receptive
doubt
receptive to it, like, yes, exactly, and receive it, yep,
like
exactly.
No doubt, like a radio signal and you can the wires get crossed and what have you, but it's a good way to communicate because that way you're responsible for things yourself. It has to come through your brain and your brain puts its own slant on it. So I don't have any outer communication with them. I haven't done for 22 years. But I feel they're still there. I can sometimes feel their presence. And when I pray, I include them in my prayers. I don't pray to them, but I talk to them, as it were, and I try and hold my mind open to receive them. And I feel that when I write, sometimes, not always by any means, but sometimes what I write just seems to come sort of straight through. And maybe that's them. Maybe that's my own higher self. It doesn't really matter what it is, if it seems okay. So I believe we all have this, though. I believe we all have guides in the spiritual world who are trying to communicate with us, trying to impress us with ideas, trying to move us further along this path. Because this path is leading us all, well, I don't know about all, but it's intended to lead us all to a high spiritual state, because when you talk about Earth being a school, you have to say, well, what's it a school for? What's it trying to do? And in my view, it's a school to make gods, little gods. And gods are creative beings, which gets us back to the imagination and so on, and its powers of creativity. Part of the lessons for us in this world is to unfold our own creative powers and become co-creators with God, because we live in his creation, but we still have the power to affect that creation, to change it in certain ways. And that's what we are supposed to be doing. And that's how we eventually become co-creators with the divine.
My gal who's in the chat room who did all of the PR, Candy, I call her my Candy. They're all mine. she asks us, how has your study of history before you were born influenced your writing? So in other words, the history before you were born, those periods of time, did they influence your writing?
Is she talking about just ordinary history, such as
Yes, I believe so. I believe so. She's listening. She can listen.
I don't think it's influenced the content, but it's given it a kind of like a frame. It's given it a frame. Imagine the writing being a picture or a painting. The painting is not necessarily influenced by history, but the frame sets it off in a way. Or like a ring where you have the jewel, and you have the actual ring and the setting. So yes, I would say that history, in which I've always been very interested, does give a kind of context to the thing. And when you look at past history, you see that Earth is a school not just for individual souls such as you and me and Candy, your Candy. It's also a school for the whole of humanity. And you can see how humanity progresses along that path in its different forms and through different times and different places. And what's interesting about the present time that is that it's like many rivers have all joined up, the rivers being European civilization, Chinese civilization, Indian civilization, the last four or five years, American civilization. And all these rivers have now joined up and emptied themselves into one great lake. And so it's a very interesting time to be.
It is. It really. She said that makes perfect sense to me. You know, and I have a question. You know, growing up, I wasn't curious. I just kind of absorbed everything. I was very quiet. I know that's hard to imagine, William, but I was very quiet. It wasn't until, I don't know, maybe when I started my first website. I don't know if that was it or not. But I was never encouraged to do anything, really. But it seems that the last maybe 5 years, I have this thirst for knowledge. I have learned so much. Why did it take so long? Or maybe it didn't. Maybe I had to reach a point to be able to learn something that I've learned, you know, for the past 5 years. Maybe you have to, it's all about timing too, right?
It's preparation, perhaps. I mean, I'm not going to comment on you because I wouldn't dream of being so presumptuous. But for anybody, I think things happen when you're ready. It's rather like there's a preparatory moment, or not moment, there's a preparatory period, and that builds up, and then you're ripe, as it were. And then you become ripe to receive what you're then given, which perhaps if you'd received before, you wouldn't have been able to process it in the same way. But through the years of preparation, you're ready for it, and you can take it in, and you can absorb it, and you can run with it, develop it, create with it, all sorts of things.
Right. Because it won't be overwhelming then. It'll come to you when you're able to make the adjustment and to be able to work with it, not like, I can't do all this.
Yeah. I was going to use that very well.
I think that's it. And you have to learn things along the way to reach, to learn all of these things. Like, for example, You know, I have a blog, but I have my magazine. That's the big one that takes a lot of time to do. But I had that dumped in my lap. I mean, I met with some of my friends, and I had started my first site, Planet Stars, and they said, why don't you do an e-zine? I didn't even know what that was. Now, this was, like I'm saying, 23 years ago. And I looked at them, and I said, what? Where am I going to get all this information to put it in, you know? Oh, you will. You'll do it. You'll do it. See, then they were telling me that I could do it, and I didn't even know how to do it. And so over time, I learned things, and, you know, of course, I met my webmaster about 14 years ago, and I told him about this, you know, that it was a different process doing the magazine than it is right now. Right now, it's falls all on my shoulders. I had another person that would upload it so that it could be viewed. Now I do it. It's all on me. I do it. And but you see, then I couldn't have done it. But you're right. You know, if I look back, I mean, I didn't even know what I was doing when this first began for me. I'm using the magazine because it's big and it encompasses a lot. And then I am also going to do it into a flip magazine where the pages will turn. It'll be beautiful. I already have somebody that did the templates for me. It's just a matter of launching the remake of the site of Stars. I mean, I can only do so much. I'm only one person. But your focus has to be on one thing. But what I'm doing with the magazine is allowing people and the radio show to know of people like yourself, William, that what you can do, and that we're all of the same mind, really. Some of us just don't even know it yet. You don't understand it. And so when I bring on people like yourself, and I've had so many wonderful people, it makes me feel good because somebody told me I'm bringing spiritual food to the world. Isn't that pretty? And I said, well, I never thought of it that way, but I do know that a lot of people might not know who you are. But you can bet, now I'm going to ask Gavin for something for the magazine, and I'll get it. It'll be no problem, you know, because that's I've grown with all of these people. We trust each other, and it's really wonderful where I'm sitting right now. It really is. I'm in a very good place, and there for a long, long time I was not. And something changed for me. I don't really know, but again, it's about timing, William. You have to be ready for certain things, and you have to know that you can do it. You don't even think about it; you just do it. Isn't that funny? You don't even have to think. Where maybe 5-10 years ago, you'd say, "Oh my God, I can't do that. I can't do that." Now I don't even.
Well, normally, if something happens that you don't have to think about, that's a sign that it's right. If you have to think about it too hard, it's often an indication that it's not quite right. But if it just breaks open like that, that's usually a sign that this is what's meant to be. It's like an opening in the clouds and the sun comes.
It's like your affirmation that you need that, okay, go with it. I mean, and it flows. It just flows. Candy has another question. You're inspiring her. She says, did you ever experience anything supernatural at Abbey of Les Monts Saint-Michel? How are you pronounce it? I don't even know how to pronounce it. How do you pronounce that, William?
Well, it's in Normandy, which is in the northwestern part of France.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a little island on a great bay, and the tide comes in sometimes, as they say there, at the speed of a galloping horse. So it's an extraordinary place. And on top of this little island, they've built an abbey, like a monastery, and it's called l'Abbaye du Mont Saint-Michel. So St. Michael's.
Oh, so you say it's so nice. I like it. Okay.
I lived in France for several years, and I got the traditional Englishman's reluctance to pronounce French properly. You know, normally, the Englishman would not want to pronounce French properly. He'd think that was a renunciation of his Englishness. But I learned to love the French language. Anyhow, this Abbaye du Mont-Saint-Michel was built in several stages over hundreds of years. And I didn't have any supernatural experiences there myself, though I have had them elsewhere. But I do remember that the best concert of music I've ever heard was actually in the church, because the whole island is very interesting, because at the ground level, it builds up like a tower. At the ground level, you have shops and trinket stores and so on. As you go higher, you reach a place where pilgrims would have stayed when they came, because it was a great site of pilgrimage in the Middle Ages and later. And then at the very top, you have the church. And there was a concert of plain chant, monastic song, Gregorian chant in that church I went to. And I went to it once with a friend, and I wasn't really expecting much because I thought it would be quite monotonous. I like Gregorian chant, but a little goes a long way sometimes. And this concert was an hour long or something. You know, there's not a huge amount of variety in it. But in the context of that abbey, with the stained glass windows, and as the light was very powerful, and sunset happened just as the concert took place. So the light was streaming through the windows, and then it got dark and the candles were lit. And the whole thing was quite extraordinary. You could imagine yourself back in the, I don't know, 14th century or something like that.
Yeah.
And very, very powerful experience. So that's the only, it wasn't a supernatural experience, but that's the only thing I had there. But it is if you look it up, people should look it up online and see pictures of it on this.
That's what I was just thinking of doing. I'm sure Candy's probably already doing it now. And you can, you know, there's so much online now. I mean, you can get videos of, you know, you can do so much. It's amazing. It's just, so, you know, everybody that's listening and that will listen, you know, you've got to just go out there and learn and absorb. You know, I did that as a little girl because I was quiet. Nobody knew that I was smart. Nobody knew nothing. They knew nothing about me. I was, that's all. I excelled in sports and my handwriting, my teacher that, you know, when you're really young, like in grade school, they want you to, then you would do cursive. It was called, you know, cursive. And you had to do it a certain way. The capitals were with the full block, and then the other ones were half, the lowercase. Well, yours truly here was very, I had a flair. My teacher, oh, bless her, because actually she encouraged me. You know, she came to me and she whispered, she says, you know, you're not really doing this right. And I probably gave her this look of like, oh, here we go. I can't write the way I want to write. Well, I'll write the way I want to write when I'm home, you know. She says, you really should do it this way. And I said, okay. But you know what, William? I just couldn't conform to that. And I wasn't rebellious. I was very sweet. So she came back again. It was like a Friday. She came back on a Monday or Tuesday, and she came to me again because it was handwriting time. And she leaned over, and she said, you know, I talked to my husband about it.
Hi, this is Priestess Candy. Apparently, Natalie got cut off somewhere.
Yes, she did.
On the phone.
A few seconds ago, yes, I don't quite know what happened. I'm still here.
Good. I'm glad you're still here. She'll call back in a minute. I'm sure she will.
Oh, I knew Candy would pick up the slack here. I am. I'm here. I got discombobulated.
Welcome back.
You see, now, William, you know who Candy is. Candy does videos. She does the little things on Instagram. She goes to Tumblr, to Pinterest, to Facebook, you name it. She goes there and pushes everything out, and she's not heard on the radio. And but I looked and I thought she's going to say something because she can chime in. But anyways, I was starting to tell you when she came back after talking to her husband William, she whispered to me. She says, "You know what? I just realized because I took your work home how beautiful your handwriting is." She said, "You write any way you want." And
handwriting.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be an individual thing, isn't it? So if somebody forces you to write in their way, they're sort of forcing you to change your character in a way. So, yeah, you keep it as it is.
Yeah. But, you know, that was a time when, you know, you had to do it a certain way, you know. But she saw something. She, and maybe her husband, he was from Greece. And maybe he saw something, you know, come on, let her do it. I mean, she's going to do it anyway. She's going to continue. She might write like you want her to now, but give her a few years and she's gonna do a lot. And that was probably the sweetest thing a teacher could have ever told me. And from that day on, everybody loves my handwriting. And so there's things like that are so inspirational that allow you to, and that was school. That was school on earth. It was showing me that, you know, you don't have to. I mean, you're not hurting anybody, right? People can still read it. So what's the big deal? And your book, I mean, I'm going to make sure Gavin gets it to me, or I'll just get it, you know. But the thing of it is that it's so important what you've said and what we've said and what Candy has asked, because people need to understand that there is a freedom out there. You can learn anything you want. You have to ask the right questions. I could be a bookkeeper or a CPA because I know bookkeeping. The only reason I know that, William, is because I had this young man that lived near my house, and he was a CPA. Now he's a part of the firm. And he said to me, "You know why you do this so well?" And I said, "No." He said, "Because you ask the right questions and you're not a know-it-all and you don't pretend you know it. You ask." Well, I'd say, "You know, Vince, I don't know how to do that. Will you show me?" He said, "Any teacher is going to see that, and this can be in anything, and they're going to appreciate your honesty." Well, she doesn't know how to do it. Of course I don't know how to do it. I mean, you have to learn from somebody, right?
Well, it's interesting you talk about asking questions, because going back to the spiritual teachers who came to me, when they first came, they would talk to me for 10, 15 minutes, and then they would go. But after a while, when I'd got used to this process, they would want me to ask questions, and I would have to instigate the process in a way myself. The questions would have to come from me, and then they would give the answers. And it's rather like it says in the Bible, "Ask and you shall receive." Now, right. The converse of that is if you don't ask, then you're not going to receive. You have to open things up yourself and
open that channel.
That's part of
to receive. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's what you have to do. The pupils in the school should be doing is they should be asking questions, and maybe going back to something you said earlier, people are beginning to ask questions now that they might not have done before when everything was going well. Now that things look a little more difficult and dark, people will begin asking questions, and that's a very good thing.
Yeah, like why? They want to know why. Why now? Why is this happening now? It didn't happen 10 years ago. Why is it happening now? And it's true. You're right, William. It's very true. It's amazing. Your book has come out at the right time, you know. Well, and it's supposed to, right? That's how it is. You know, it's...
That's what
I think, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Don't think. It's true. And you're joined with all these other people that I've had on my show with all this inspiration and all the wonderment. And, you know, I just sit here. One of my guests, I said, "I knew this was going to be a good conversation." "Well, how did you know? He said. And I said, "Well, because listen to us. I mean, we could go on for hours." I said, "Because it's giving things to people. They're going to listen. Now, Gavin, I'll send this to Gavin, and he'll run with it. And that's the beauty. You have people that believe also like you and me and Candy and all of the others, and that's all it takes. You know, be nice to be nice to everybody. Just, you don't have to love them with all your heart and soul, but, you know, be kind. That's what I want to see with people. Like, I'm kind with all my dear that I have. I mean, if you saw this, I mean, you would laugh. I mean, and I worry about them. And, you know, you don't have to worry about them. They survive. They know what to do. And my son reminds me that. He says, don't worry about it. You know, I have this big, huge male. He's got these big, huge antlers. I've never seen a buck this big. I said to my son, I said, but I worry because he comes late and all the females are eating all the food because I give apples and carrots and deer food, regular, real good stuff. And he said, Mom, he said, don't worry about him. He's got thick skin. He's got all that fur. He's been around a long time. I said, yeah, I know. He said, you just worry about everybody in the world. I said, yeah, I guess I do. If I could fix it all, I would, William. I really, really would. But we know I can't do that. All I can do is bring on beautiful people like you. And that can help to inspire. And I'm so glad you decided to be on the show. And did you have to think about it? I mean, because you had to get international calling, right?
That was no problem. That was very simple. It's cheap.
But why did you want to come on the show? Did he just say you're going to do this at this time? Are you available? And of course, you and I had written back and forth because it was supposed to be before, because you were, I think you were traveling, right?
I wasn't traveling. I can't remember why I didn't come off before. But no, Gavin suggested this, and I'm really pleased he did, because I think we've had a really nice conversation. And
we certainly have. Yeah, we certainly have. And I'm just very blessed to have you now in my life, you see, just like that.
You're too kind now.
You keep doing what you're doing. Don't stop. Really.
Your deer are very lucky. Your deer are lucky to have you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You know, sometimes it's nice to hear it from people like yourself because you're so well-educated and you are, you know, world-traveled and all of that. And, I mean, I hear it from, you know, Candy tells me that all the time, you know, and my granddaughter and my son. Not so much my daughter-in-law, but my son and my granddaughter. And, I'm really blessed. And I have people that listen to the show that, and all of these authors, you should see what they write to me. I mean, it makes my day. Many of the notes that I get, and people from China and Japan and India, I have poets from there. And a new young poet, that from Japan, and she writes a little broken, but it's just so sweet. She writes very sweet to me. So, yeah, there's a lot of great people. We have to keep believing that, and we have to keep nourishing everybody and shoving them along. Come on, you can do this, right?
That's just it, yes. And I think we're given opportunities to help other people as other people help us. And then we can pass things along. We receive and we give. And it's a beautiful thing, really.
Yep. It really, really is. And Candy just reminded me about your website that you have, meetingthemasters.blogspot.com. Go take a look there. He's got stuff there that he has written. Are you still working on that? Do you still do that, William?
I do.
Oh,
that's
yeah, you
been
have
going
something from, here from the 19th of November, right?
Yeah. I do about once every 4 days or so. I put a little article up. That's been going for 7 years now, I think. No, eight years. So.
Okay. Gavin, I don't need you. I can just go to his blog and get stuff because William will give me permission to use it, so long as I give you, you know, credit for it. Of course I would. I've never not given somebody credit, but I'll see what he sends. He might do an excerpt from your book. I don't know, but you can bet when I send him the recording, I'm going to ask. I always ask. Doesn't hurt to ask, right?
No, certainly not. Well, the book, as I say, is called Earth is a School, and it's really describing in the way that there's a spiritual education ground for human souls. And at the at the end of the book, I include a chapter about my encounters with these spiritual beings, just to give some kind of context for the for where I get these thoughts from, so that people could have a
don't stop writing. I'm telling you this again. Don't stop. Oh, you've been doing this a long time. Look at all of this sitting in here with this on your, the site that you have. Yes, yes. It's got all of it listed here. How wonderful. Well, you're like me, you know. I mean, I don't write yet, but you're encouraging me, and I really I want to have my granddaughter's input with my fairy tale, although I have a story and I know how it ends, and everybody's going to feel really good. It's not – it's to make you feel really good and to make you understand. You know, I have had things happen to me. I know it's true. So with that, I'm going to say thank you, William. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'm and if I don't get anything from Gavin, I kind of know that I will. I'll write to you because, you know, now I got your email address. So it's all over.
You do? Well, Natalie, thank you so much for having me on your show. As I just said, it's been a really good experience, and I think we've had a really good talk.
We had a really good talk, yes, yes, and I knew we would. I knew we would. And you have an awesome evening. And Candy, thank you. I want to thank you right away because she does a lot of work. She really put out a lot this week. Of course, I kind of really lit a fire under her. I told her, we got to keep doing. We got to do more and more and more. And she had to get ready for two authors this week. Next week, she's gonna have a break. Yeah, one author, and then I'm going to talk on Friday with Stars JC. We're going to do some astrology stuff, and that'll be fun. And so anyways, yes, you have a great evening, and I hope that we'll be corresponding soon, okay? Now, with that, I'm going to tell everybody the next show will be on Monday from 7 to 8. And then, like I said, Jackie and I will be on the 26th, which will be right after Thanksgiving. We're going to do sign signatures, and we're going to take questions. Yes, her and I will. And I'll have Candy put all that out, of course. Candy does all of that. I don't have anybody else to do it. And, you know, it's funny, and I have to tell her this. When I have to do some of this, I mean, I can do a show page, but I certainly can't put it up like her. I mean, she's just got the knack, you know, and then she goes off and she puts all these posts and all of this. It's just amazing. I'm very blessed with her. And so, okay, so we're going to play some music called Free to Love, of course, by Gabby Ray. I remember her name. Yes, she's something, her music. It makes you feel good. It's feel good. And, of course, I want to also end the show with what I always end the show with, and that is believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. Okay, Candy, here's your music by Gabby Ray.
If everyone could be who they were really meant to be, without limitations, discrimination, this world could show all its colors, so get the chip off the shoulder.
everybody. See you Monday.
Peace.